But I wanted to sing to a certain young man who's actually in the room, a man that I have admired and dreamed about from afar, a man who has been in my every dream. Ain't that right, girls? They know all my waking and sleeping thoughts. I tell them everything, don't I, girls? Yes. Help is so hard to find, don't you find? In any event, getting back to the young man in question, he is probably the sexiest man on two continents. He's tall, and he's the handsomest man in the room right now. Mr. Eunice Hallberry. Oh, Uni, Uni, Uni. This one's for you. Hit it, boy.
Well, hello.
Här ska ni få höra en flicka som kan snacka.
Det är Bette Midler
som intervjuas
i amerikanska programmet CNN.
Larry King Live, 20
september
1995.
Now, live from New York, here's Larry King.
What a joy to have as our special guest for the full hour tonight, the incredibly talented, the divine Miss M, Bette Midler. Her 16th album, Bed of Roses, is out from Atlantic, even though she's no longer with Atlantic,
don't
right?
Don't say that.
Did you leave them?
Well, I haven't left them yet.
What does that mean?
This is my last record for them, but I've told them all. I've gone around to the office and I've said, I'll be back.
What has caused this impasse?
Well, it wasn't exactly an impasse. I moved over to Warner Brothers Records. And then, of course, all hell broke loose. So now I have a contract with Warner Brothers, but it's it's odd what's going on over there. I'm not really sure, but what's going on. But I'm there, you know, I have my deal. I'm happy. I'm happy to make records.
That's the latest thing. Everybody moves over to Warner Brothers.
I guess. I don't know. But, you know, I started it with Atlantic Records. Ahmet Erdogan signed me many, 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 many years ago. He always told me 20 records or 20 years, whichever came first. So I had 20 years. I put 20 years in with them, and I really love them. But I thought, you know, it's time for a change.
How did you get the Divine Miss M moniker?
Well, I'd always said I was divine ever since I was a very young child.
You would call yourself?
I called myself divine. I would say, I'm divine. It's divine. I love that. I'm divine. It's divine.
Good word.
Isn't it? Because, you know, in the old days, you know, when I used to go to the movies, when my mother used to drag me to the movies, she always dragged me to movies about sophisticated women because she loves sophisticated women. And I just picked it up from the kinds of movies that she used to take me to, and I would go around imitating these characters. And I remember very clearly pretending I was probably someone in The Women, that old movie, The Women.
Would you bill yourself when you started as the Divine Miss M?
Well, the first night I played at the Continental Baths, the man who ran the Continental Baths stuck his head in the dressing room door and said, how do you want me to introduce you? I said, tell them I'm divine. And I had a hairdresser, one of my best friends at the time. His name was Bill Hennessy, and he always used to call me Miss M. And I used to call him Mr. G, because when he was a hairdresser, famous hairdresser, he went by that moniker, Mr. Gerard, and all his clients called him Mr. G. So he was Mr. G, and I was Miss M. And I told him, tell them I'm the divine Miss M. And he went out, and it stuck. And I've had it with me ever since. I've had it for close to 25 years.
What came first? Now, my first recollection of you is Fiddler on the Roof.
You remember?
You were the oldest daughter.
I was.
Matchmaker, matchmaker, make me a match.
For many years.
You and Zero.
But I didn't start, and I didn't work with Zero. I worked with Herschel Bernardi.
I saw you with him.
You did?
Yes, I saw everyone do it.
It was a wonderful show.
Was that pre-Bathhouse?
Pre-Bathhouse, yeah.
How did you go from that to that?
Well, I never could get another job on Broadway. I got into Fiddler on the Roof. I was the second replacement for that part. And I would make all the rounds, and I would go to all the auditions, and I could not get another job. I couldn't get a job as a singer. I couldn't get a job as a straight actress. I simply could not get a job. So I looked around, and I said, you know, this isn't really working. I better find something else to do. And so I started singing on my own. This girlfriend of mine, Marta Heflin, who was in the show, was working at a club called Hilly's in the Village. I think it's gone now. And she would go down, and she'd dragged me with her, and you would sing three songs a night, and you would learn some material. And then it turned out that there was a whole circuit of little clubs in town where you could sing for free. So I used to sing three songs on 9th Street, three songs on 52nd Street, three songs on 44th Street. You know, you went from club to club to club all night long. And that's how I built my
show. Hoping for a break or that?
No, just learning the craft, really, just learning the craft of singing, of entertaining people as a solo artist.
Wasn't it unusual, though, to work bathhouses?
You know, people always say that to me, but to me it was nothing. Everyone seemed so surprised, and I think that's part of the reason I became so notorious, but to me it was just like another part of show business. I guess nothing really surprises me. You know, I'm kind of like, I'm not jaded exactly, but I'm sanguine, cold-blooded.
Was there any reason, do you think, why it was first the gay community that hooked on to Bette Midler?
Well, there's been a lot written about that.
Yeah, and
why do I think?
Yeah.
I think that they were thrilled that there was entertainment in this place because it took the onus off all the rest of it. You know, it became very wholesome. And They liked the idea that it was not, they liked the idea that it was, that every week it was a different show. And they also liked the idea that it was, that I was very experimental. I would sing anything. I would sing rock and roll, I would sing the blues, I would sing show songs, I would sing ballad, semi-operatic things. I would sing anything. They're and also, they were interested in that.
There may have been another quality, do you think?
Well, it could have been what they used to call vulnerability. But of course, I'm tough as nails now.
You've changed.
Yes, I've changed.
Why aren't you Betty, by the way?
That's another question. You know, Betty Davis was so cruel to me. No, that's another story.
She was?
I was Betty, I was Bet because my mother thought that's how it was pronounced. She thought it was Bette Davis. I was named after Bette Davis.
And she was called Bette Davis a lot.
I never did figure it out. I always heard her called Betty Davis.
Yeah, but there are a lot of people said Bette Davis.
Mm. Mm.
And she was cruel to you?
Well, she was rude to, really, really mean
Where?
To me. Well, we went, it was Elizabeth Taylor's birthday party. Tell me the tales out of school. Well, it was Elizabeth Taylor's birthday party. I forget what birthday it was, but it was a very, very big deal. And a girlfriend of mine was throwing it, and so she invited a lot of people. And I was happened to be at Miss Davis's table. That's what it's called. It's a table.
Yes,
I was at the table.
The name
And
place.
So she loved to talk to men, but she didn't love to talk to women, I gathered. At least that evening, she didn't feel like talking to any women. So, but I didn't know that, and I got up from my seat in order to give her, you know, to pay her, to pay her my respects to her, as I was taught as a person, as a growing mm-hmm. up, that that's what you were supposed to do when you had there was someone you admired. So I went to pay my respects to her, and she frosted me. I mean, she was like... Because she didn't like, it turned out she didn't like what I had on. I had just had my baby, and I guess I did look a little ratty, but I had practically got up out of my sick bed to come to this thing. And she reduced me to tears. I will never forget.
No
she
kiss.
Did. Yeah, she was so cold. I said, I wanted to speak to Miss, I went up to her and I said, Miss Davis, I'm a great fan of yours, and it's very nice to see you again. And she turned from me, you know, and I thought, oh, well, really? You know, and then I thought, oh, I can't deal with this, and then I left. But it was too bad because I was a great, great fan of hers, and I remain a great fan of hers to this day.
And you're named after her.
And I'm named after her. She was a tremendous, tremendous craftsman, and she did a lot of wonderful things for everybody. I mean, breaking contracts and all that stuff.
A lot to talk about. What was your first big, big break?
Well, I would have to say it was Fiddler on the Roof, and it was Jerry Robbins that gave it to me. He was very anxious to cast that part. He always had a hand in the casting of that show. He never gave that up. And the casting director didn't want me to go up for the part. And she told me, she called me the day of the audition and said, if you don't go up to this for the part of the oldest daughter, I will see to it that you get a part in the chorus. And I said, but I came to meet Jerry Robbins. This was the first time I'd ever met Jerry Robbins. I was going to meet Jerry Robbins. I was going to actually be in the same room with him. I was so excited because, you know, in the theater, he is, of course,
a
giant. So, I hung up the phone and I burst into tears. I was really overwrought because she was going to call me back and I was going to tell her that I was either not going to go or that I would go. So I thought about it for a while and I thought, I came to meet Jerry Robbins, I'm going to meet him and I don't care if I get this job. So when she called me back, I said, I'm going to take the audition anyway. And I took the audition. I was so overwrought. And, you know, the part called for big tears and a big theatrical, you know, screaming.
Leaving daddy.
Leaving, no, asking for the, saying she didn't want to marry the butcher.
Yeah.
That was the scene. And I was so overwrought that, of course, I sobbed. I mean, I just burst into tears because I didn't know, I was a wreck. And I got the job. And that was really my first big break. And I have him to thank for.
Laser Wolf was
the
butcher.
A blessing on your head, Mazel Tov.
Mazel Tov.
That was a great song.
Oh. Bette Midler's our guest. She's with us for the full hour. We'll be taking your phone calls as we go back into the past. We're also going to talk about her new album, Bette of Roses. And here is a clip from the CD version. Listen. You went through 50 songs?
Oh, more than 50 songs, way more than 50.
What were you looking for?
Well, you
a
want...
A concept?
No, you want the song... First of all, I'm basically an interpreter of lyrics. I also love beautiful melodies. The melody has kind of fallen by the wayside in popular music, and sometimes the lyrics are indecipherable too, but I come from that school that really loves the words and really and wants those soaring melodies.
Sinatra school.
Basically,
sing the words.
Well, sing the words. Sing the emotion of the song. There's a big movement afoot not to have so much emotion in music, but I don't feel that way.
So that's what you're looking for?
I'm looking for the song that strikes me, the song that makes me cry, the song that makes me laugh, the song that transports me to another place, because that's what music is. It's a vehicle to transport you, to take you out of yourself. And I look for a magical quality in songs. The same songs are not going to have the same effect on every singer, but for me, I take great pains to choose my material.
Are these all new songs?
A couple of them are covers. There's a couple of country covers. One song is called In This Life, which is which is my new single, and a song called I Believe in You, which was a hit in 1978 or 1979, and they did an update. They rewrote the lyric for me, so it's very funny. And
are you very particular when you record? Are you
I think everyone
painstakingly...
is. I think everyone is. Everyone of a certain age is painstaking. A lot of kids, a lot of the younger, really, really young ones who are just starting out, they don't care what they sound like, or that's their sound. But I like beautiful voices, and I like wonderful playing, and I like, and I don't think that makes me square, really. I think it just makes me appreciate the fact that people have put so much effort into learning their skill. I mean, Eric Clapton is a genius guitar player. I mean, he's not the only one. There are many, but you have to admire someone who not only has talent, but also has the determination or the drive to put the hours in to practice, you know, because it to make it look effortless is the hardest work of all.
Are you a singer who acts?
I would say I was an actor who sings.
So acting is first.
I have to say so. Yes. Acting comes very easy to me. Singing is really, really hard. Really hard. Acting is like, ugh. You know, I mean, you can do it in your sleep. Singing is so hard.
Streisand says the same thing.
Oh, does she?
She's an actress
interesting.
Who sings.
That's very, very interesting.
Very interesting. Acting comes easily to you?
It's easy. It's great. It's like, it's so...
Because you're pretending?
No, because I have that could be it. That's part of it. But also I have the ability to project myself into situations and to utterly believe that the environment I'm in is true. I guess it is pretending, yes.
How many films have you made?
Well, I think I've made something like 13 or 14, something like that.
Why not more?
Well, you know, I ask myself the same thing all the time because I really enjoy making films. The material is very hard to come by. I had a contract with Walt Disney. I was with them for 10 years. I can't believe it's been so long. And I put myself in their hands and, you know, just said to, basically gave up my... That ability,
freedom of choice.
Yeah, my freedom of choice. So
they,
I had to take what they gave me,
poorly.
Well, I'm not casting any stones because I made a lot of money. Why should I? I'm not gonna. But
they didn't give you any great material.
No, they gave the first few years I started with them. They were in business like the first year that I came there. I started with Down Out in Beverly Hills, and for the first 5 years, it was fantastic.
Great movie.
We had great comedies. We had fabulous directors. The energy was great. And then something happened about 5 or 6 years after there was a start. It seemed, after we started, rather, it seemed as if they wanted to save money, they wanted to pull back, they didn't want to hire the A-list directors, and they wanted to develop their material themselves. And consequently, I felt that...
They went cheap, in other words.
Well, I don't want to say that because who am I? I don't...
You made all the movies made money?
No. I made money, but the movies didn't make money.
What was your biggest hit?
Biggest hit was probably Ruthless People. Biggest, most beloved film was probably The Rose, but I didn't make that for Walt Disney.
How about the movie with the woman dying?
Beach is great, very beloved. Actually, that is number one, and The Rose is number two.
And the song?
Wind Beneath My Wings, thank you very much. What a kick.
That's one of the great, great songs ever. And that's perpetual, that song, right?
Yes, it is.
Never get tired of it.
Yes, it is.
Bette Midler is the guest. We'll be back with more of The Divine Miss M. We'll be including your phone calls tomorrow.